We have had some technical problems.
Ready to go. I'm ready to go.
Hit it!
Welcome to Vox Macabre, a podcast about everything horror, from movies to books, from TV shows to games. Follow us on Threads and Instagram at Vox Macabre, and our website, voxmacabre.com.
Oh, here we go. It is the premiere episode of Vox Macabre. My name is Kip Mann, and I thank you for being here. And I especially thank you early adopters that started subscribing when you started following us on social media, mostly thanks to our producer and social media person, Dara, who has been kind of handling all the online stuff while we've been putting this together. This is episode number one of Vox Macabre, a podcast that will be about horror and the horror genre. Now, I want to make sure we tell you, anybody can tell you what they are and what they are not. And I think it's probably important that we do some what are we are nots, because, and I don't want to start off in like a whole bunch of negatives, but I want to make sure you understand that we are not a horror review podcast. And by that, I mean, we're a horror talk about podcast. Because quite frankly, I am... You know, I may have some confidence in what I do, but I am not arrogant enough to believe that I should be telling other people what they should and should not like. And movie reviewers in general, I don't know if you've ever met any, and I don't mean online people. I mean like proper movie reviewers that are paid by big publications to review movies. If you've ever met any of these people, oh my God. They're the kind of people, and I don't mean to generalize, but sometimes stereotypes are stereotypes for a reason, and this is one of those times. They are the singular most punchable people on the planet. Anytime you meet somebody that believes their opinion is a fact, that person needs to be out of your life. And movie reviewers, oh man, they're the worst. Oh. So if I say I like something, it means I like it. It means you might like it. And you could say, no, I hate that. And that's fine. We can still get along and have a conversation. But if I say I like something or don't like something and your immediate reaction is to tell me why I'm wrong, then we're not going to have a conversation. Because I'm not going to argue about art. Arguing about art is stupid. Stupid. You may not like Rob Zombie Halloween movie. Maybe I do. I'm not saying I do. I'm saying maybe I do. Do you want to argue with me about that? That's just dumb. Like, why would you want to argue about art? You ever been to a museum and you see a piece of art and you go, wow, I really like that. What would you say if somebody next to you was like, what are you, an idiot? It's your opinion. It's what you like. I like Hellraiser 2 better than Hellraiser 1. Okay. I like a lot of stuff that you're not going to like. And you probably like a lot of stuff I'm not going to like. Wait until I drop a bomb on you in like episode 5 or 6 or something when I tell you about a horror movie that I absolutely do not understand why people revere it so much. There is a movie out there that some of you guys act like is the stairway to heaven of horror movies. And look, it's a fine movie, but I do not understand why it is given this reverential treatment and put up on a pedestal. I'm not going to tell you what it is today. I'll pre-sell it and tell you that we will at some point talk about it later on. But, and when I do, a lot of you are going to get really mad because a lot of you think that this is some kind of a piece of genius artwork or something. And in reality, it's just another movie, and most of it's pretty crappy. In my opinion, that doesn't mean your opinion is going to be the same. And I guarantee you in this one particular instance, it will not be the same. So there's really no rules. There's just don't argue. Like, I don't want to argue. I don't want to argue about art. Also, don't do politics. Don't do politics stuff on our page, on any of our social media. If you respond to any social media with a bunch of political nonsense, you get blocked. Period. The end. Goodbye. All right, here we go. It is Vox Macabre. This is the premiere episode. At some point, we will get to know each other on a more personal level. Oh, and a few things about the show. The podcast is more of like a radio show than it is a podcast. Because a lot of times you hear podcasts is a bunch of nerdy stuff going on. And, you know, back to the people thinking opinion is fact and things like that. That's not what we're about here. This is more like a radio show. It's more like we got different segments of things that are going on. Like, we're going to have a feature segment every episode, which will feature a movie. Today, that feature segment will feature the movie Angel Heart, and I will tell you why in a little while. But then we've also got some other things like hidden gems, things that some of us, the typical horror fan is not who a lot of us think it is, because we want to think the typical horror fan is like us. That, like, if you look around my studio right now, there are autographs from famous horror actors, and there are memorabilia all over the place of different horror actors and different characters. And, you know, I've got a Jason coffee mug, and you know, it's stuff like that. Like, it's kind of the nerdy part of any fandom. But the fact is, and we're going to get into some horror fan demographics here in a few minutes, but the fact is the average horror fan, they got a life to lead. They got other stuff going on. They are not people like me that knows who the second assistant director for Jason Takes Manhattan was, right? Like, they're not sitting around on their couch with a bag of Cheetos deep diving into some crappy D movie. Like, they're just not. And so this podcast is for everybody. It's for the deep dive D-movie schlock nerds. And it's for the people that watch one or two horror movies a month and maybe read Stephen King, right? They know who Pinhead is, but they don't probably know the actor's name. You see what I'm saying? So that's what this podcast is for. It's kind of for everybody. So we're going to, I may say, look, this is a hidden gem, and turn you on to a new movie or a TV show that you may sit there and go, what is he talking about, Hidden Gem? Everybody knows who this is. I promise you, most of them, not everybody knows. We live in a world now where we think our world is what everybody knows. Like, when I hear people from the East Coast refer to a bodega, they think that that's what everybody calls those stores, because that's what they've been exposed to their whole life. But you go around the rest of the country, no one anywhere outside the East Coast calls them bodegas. They just don't. So that's where we live in. Like, we live in these like fandom bubbles, and we think that everybody knows what we know, and they don't. So when I say hidden gem, I'm mostly talking to the people that like horror, but maybe are not immersed in it. And I want to turn them on to something new. We're also going to have some features called the Iconic Five, which we will do today. And that is five things that we have decided are the best things about something. And today we're going to tell you the five best, in our opinion, not factual, the five best Christopher Lee roles, movies, roles, things about Christopher Lee. Okay, that will be the Iconic Five today. And we're also going to have a classic backtrack, talk about a classic movie that many people may have seen 1,000 times, and some people may have never seen it. We're going to do that every episode as well. And then we got some stories and all kinds of stuff that we're going to try to hit. Now, we are going to take a 30-second break, because we kind of have to right now. We'll get into all this later on. So we're going to take a 30-second break. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk about Angel Heart, In 30 seconds, don't go away.
You may not think of flu as a serious disease, but complications can lead to severe illness, hospitalization, and even death. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends everyone 6 months and older get a flu vaccine every year. Vaccines are available at doctor's offices, pharmacies, and local health departments. Protect yourself and your loved ones this flu season. Get a flu shot today. Learn more at cdc.gov/fightflu.
Now, back to Vox Macabre and Kit Man.
Oh, death and grief and sorrow and murder.
We're available on all major podcast platforms. Please make sure to subscribe or heart or whatever.
It really helps if you subscribe or heart or like. Everyone is different, right? All the different podcast platforms. But if you could subscribe, that would be super helpful. I want to get into Angel Heart in just a second, but I was going through some interesting horror genre, horror fan demographics. And some of these may seem obvious, but others of them are not necessarily obvious, and it's pretty cool. First of all, if you break down, this one I found really interesting. If you break down all of the genres, so you got rom-com and comedies and drama and mysteries and historical this, you know, you break them all down. Horror is the one that has the widest audience in terms of age and socioeconomic status. I thought that was super interesting. Horror appeals to way more people than you think it does. Rich people, poor people, middle class, it doesn't matter. Horror fans tend to rage and age all the way from 13, 14 years old up until, you know, dead. And gender is the really interesting one. Traditionally, horror movie audiences, when polled or when surveyed, were predominantly male. And by predominantly, I mean for a long time, it was very predominantly male. In that 60-40 range. However, recent research suggests that the gender gap has been closer and closer and closer with every 5 years or so that goes by. That gender gap got smaller and smaller and smaller. In fact, some studies now indicate that women may make up the majority of horror movie audiences. It's literally now at that 50-50 point, and it may be actually moving into that 51-49 female, which is pretty cool. Researchers also suggest that individuals who enjoy horror movies tend to have a higher level of sensation-seeking and openness to new experiences, and a lower level of anxiety and a greater tolerance for ambiguity and uncertainty. Interesting. Other studies indicate that horror movie viewing may provide a cathartic release and have therapeutic benefits for your mental health. See, that's no surprise to a lot of us. Also, horror movie fans tend to be a little bit smarter on the IQ scale. Maybe not overly so, but a little bit. And tend to tolerate differences in others over fans of other genres. I found that most of those I found like pretty interesting. And so, not really super surprising, but pretty interesting. All right, every week on the program, we're going to talk about, again, not review. I'll tell you some things I like about and some things I don't like about the movie, but we're going to have a featured movie each week. And this episode, oh, by the way, I also want to bring up, we're going to do two episodes a week. You'll get a new episode every Monday and Thursday. Hopefully those will post at around 9 a.m. on Mondays or Thursdays, but every platform is a little bit different. So you got to kind of keep an eye on when your platform of choice posts. And if you're listening to this on a platform that you normally wouldn't just because you wanted to hear it and you think, oh, I wish they were on this or this or that, whatever platform, let us know. I think we've got you all covered. I mean, we're on everything from the small ones like Podcast Addict all the way up to the big ones like Amazon and Apple and Spotify. But if we miss one, you know, let us know. And oh, we're also on iHeartRadio. I don't know if we mentioned that one before, but I think they just put us up on iHeartRadio about 2 days before this episode. So the movie I want to talk about today is Angel Heart. And why I want to talk about Angel Heart is because, A, it is my all-time favorite horror movie. And I'm not even sure, well, no, I was going to say it's not even close, but that's not true because the original Exorcist is not too far behind. But Angel Heart is my all-time favorite horror movie, so I figured that's where I want to start in our movie talkabouts for today. Now, I don't know if you know too much about Angel Heart, but the movie was based on a book. And that book is called Falling Angel. Now, the book is, it's by William Hjortsberg. He also wrote the screenplay for the movie. Falling Angel is weird. It's a book that it's not terribly long. It's lengthy, page-wise. In fact, before the movie, Angel Heart came out, I had actually read the book Falling Angel. And I was young. I was, I don't know, 19, 18, 19 years old. I read it on an airplane. I remember very distinctly. I can even remember buying the book at the airport. It was in Dallas and I was flying to San Francisco. And I read that book and I read it in one sitting on that flight. It was one of those books that I read and I'm like, I could not put it down. It was fantastic. And when the movie came out, I don't know, it must have been, maybe 2 years later after I read the book. I did not realize at the time that I had already read the book. I didn't know Angel Heart was taken from the book Falling Angel. So I went to see the movie because at the time, of course, being a horror fan, that was one reason. But I was also a Mickey Rourke fan. And so I said, oh, there's Mickey Rourke horror movie? Of course, I'm going to go see it. And so while I'm watching the movie, I'm like, why is this so familiar? Like, I kind of know some of this stuff. And then, you know, about halfway through, I was like, oh, I think I've read this book. What I really like about the movie is the Alan Parker is the director. And I really like the atmosphere of it. I love that it was shot on location in New York and New Jersey and Louisiana. They actually shot the whole thing on location. There's not a lot of set work. I love that because it really contributes to like the dark and eerie sort of film noir tone that Alan Parker sets in this movie. I would love... You're going to notice when we do these little feature things that I probably get off on little sidetrack tangents here, but I want to say one thing. I would have loved to have Alan Parker and this mindset. I would have loved to have had him take the Clive Barker, Harry D'Amore character that was initially, you know, the detective hunting down Pinhead. I know it goes further than that, but for layman purposes, Harry D'Amore is a detective. Very long the lines of what Alan Parker could have done with Angel Heart, or that did with Angel Heart, but could have done with that character for Clive Barker. And I would love to have seen Harry D'Amore like the Lord of Illusions movie, the Clive Barker Lord of Illusions movie. That's got Harry D'Amore, but there's some things about that movie that are just so done wrong. It does not do Harry D'Amore justice in that movie. And Scott Bakula played him okay. It was all right. I could see Scott Bakula actually doing the character pretty well. But, you know, it was one of those movies that felt to me like they threw it together. And we'll talk about Lord of Illusions someday. But that's my side note. I wish Alan Parker could have got a hold of Harry D'Amore and the Clive Barker, that universe that Clive Barker created. I think it would have been so cool. Now back to Angel Heart. So Angel Heart, one thing is really interesting. Now, if you have seen it, you're going to know what I'm talking about. And if you haven't seen it, this is one of those movies where you can really say, now granted, the devil plays a big part in this, right? But you could almost say that Harry Angel, the main character, Mickey Rourke's character, you could almost say he's the antagonist and the protagonist, because he's the antagonist of the previous incarnation of him, which was Johnny Favorite, Jonathan Liebling, Johnny Golden Tonsils. That was who he was. And then he became Harry Angel through a series of supernatural events coupled with some amnesia and some plastic surgery. Like, if that's not the plot for a horror movie, I don't know what is. We got some supernatural stuff, some amnesia, and some plastic surgery, and suddenly one guy becomes another guy, and he is his own antagonist in the movie. Now, the devil is obviously the main antagonist, right? Played brilliantly by Robert De Niro. You know, there's some cheesy stuff. I do think it's a little bit cheesy of what De Niro's character's name is in the movie. That always made me just a little bit cringy, you know? His name is Louis Cypher. Yeah, Lucifer. And the thing that makes me cringy is we all got it. Like, the minute he said his name, we all went, oh yeah, Lucifer. Yeah, we get it. But Harry didn't get it until way, way at the end of the movie. And that made me kind of cringe a little bit. Like, come on, man. You didn't figure that one out? But that being said, it does have its own... That kind of does lend a little bit to its charm, to the charm of the movie. Here's a really interesting thing, that Robert De Niro was actually considered for the role of Harry Angel first. You know who else was considered for that role that a lot of people don't know? Jack Nicholson. Nicholson was originally the first choice, I believe, of Harry Angel. And then they said, well, maybe Robert De Niro does Harry Angel and Nicholson does the devil. And then they said, nah, we need somebody else to be Harry. We need somebody a little younger and a little different attitude-wise. And so it became Mickey's performance. And, of course, he, you know, critical acclaim. He's fantastic in the movie. He just is flat phenomenal. His descent into realizing what is going on is it's amazing. It's just fantastic. At about that, you know, with that, what, 30 minutes left, 28 minutes left in the movie, when it starts to finally kind of click, that's when it just really goes off the rails. But there's also some stuff about the movie that a lot of people get confused upon. A lot of people think that Epiphany Proudfoot, played by Lisa Bonet, oh boy, was that controversial when that came out, because she was a Cosby girl. And here she is, buck naked, doing filthy stuff with Mickey Rourke while blood is cascading all around the room. Oh my gosh. The innocent Cosby girl. Yeah, that was a thing. But a lot of people think that in the movie, Epiphany Proudfoot, who is Lisa Bonet's character, is Mickey Rourke's daughter. And that the whole controversial thing was, oh my God, he had sex with his daughter. But that's not actually the case. And you may be sitting there going, what? He says that's my daughter. He does, but he only says it to the cop. And if you really get into what happened, when the cop says, who's that? And he says, that's my daughter. He's just trying to, he's at that point in the movie where he's just trying to make everything better. And for him to say, that's my daughter, it throws everything into disarray. And he doesn't have to admit that he was there and that he had sex with her right before all the bad stuff happened, right? So he quickly changes his mind. If you really watch the movie, in the very next sentence, he flip-flops. So a lot of people got confused about the who she is. Now, if you really go back and start paying attention, and this becomes more prevalent or more obvious in the book, but Mickey Rourke is actually Harry Angel's character, not the Harry Angel one, the before one, the Johnny Favorite one. That character is actually Epiphany's, is the father of Epiphany's child. And you may be thinking, what? That can't be right. It is. You got to trust me on this. Go watch it again. And that's actually the father of Epiphany's child. Because Harry did the nasty with Epiphany's mom and then with Epiphany. And Epiphany's mom, Evangeline Proudfoot, there's another scene in the movie where Harry's at the at Mama Carter's, the voodoo store. And she tells him that Evangeline, this and that, was waiting on a guy. And he says, just like the poem. And they say, yeah, just like the poem. That's a, is that a Wadsworth poem? What's the poem with that? Yeah. Anyway, so, there's one other thing I love about this movie. The fact that it's a horror movie, and you got to remember at the time, and even now, there's still a dumb stigma. Like, you ever hear anybody say, oh yeah, it's a really good movie for a horror movie, right? It's like, I don't want to hear that, okay? Because a good movie is a good movie, period. But when you realize that this movie has Mickey Rourke, Robert De Niro, and Charlotte Rampling in it, it is a horror movie with three Academy Award winners. I think Charlotte's an Academy Award nominee. She may not have won. But you've got three Academy Award nominees because Charlotte Rampling, she plays Margaret Krusmark in it, who is, she was nominated for Academy Award Best Actress, I want to say, for that film 45 Years. So that would have been, what, 2015, 2016, 2015, I think. You don't see a lot of horror movies with three Academy Award nominees in the big parts. That's just pretty cool. So the film is set in the 1950s. Alan Parker deliberately put the movie in the 50s. However, what I find really interesting is the music was contemporary to the 1980s. Most of it. You had a Dr. John song in there, Voodoo Mamu. Right? That's the name of that, right? You had a Dr. John song in there. You had some really cool, almost industrial sounding score at times in the movie, which is really interesting. And at this point, Alan Parker had already built a pretty solid reputation as a director. He had done Midnight Express and Birdie and Fame and Shoot the Moon. So by the time Angel Heart came out, he'd already had enough of a reputation that he could say, okay, we're going to do some craziness in this movie. If anybody else would have directed this, it might not have gotten sort of the reputation that it did, because it was in the hands of a real, real capable director. So Angel Heart, what's that? Oh, yeah. There's actually Deborah Harry sings a song in the movie, too. Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. It was mostly reviewed pretty well by the critics on its release, which was really interesting for a horror movie at the time. A lot of people didn't like all the blood and the naked. you know, people get worked up about blood and naked. You can put anything in a movie, but if you put blood and naked in the same scene, and then not just blood and naked, but naked and vigorous naked, you know, like if you're aggressively, vigorously naked and there's blood, it doesn't sit well with some people. Get a little worked up. What did I say? Is that a nipple over there and blood? Oh, my God. Let's do some pearl clutching. One cool thing about it, too, like a lot of horror or a lot of movie review people, they like to pick out like all of the continuity problems. There's not a lot of continuity problems in this. Like I look at movies sometimes and try to find issues, and there's a couple of things, a couple of minor things. In one scene, Harry has a tattoo on his chest, and in another scene, the tattoo is in a different, whatever. There's a couple of instances where the character's clothing is a little bit different or jewelry is not out when it was out before, you know, stuff like that, but nothing major. I mean, sometimes you watch horror movies, any movie, but since we are a horror movie podcast, and you just go, wait, he's wearing overalls now? Wasn't he wearing a suit a minute ago? Like sometimes they just are all over the map with their continuity, but not this one. Angel Heart. If you are already a fan, you know what I'm talking about. And if you are not a fan or if you haven't seen it, I would suggest that you go watch it. It's on the various streaming services. I think it's on Amazon Prime. I don't know. I own it. I watch it at least once a year. I probably watch it more than that, to be honest with you. The guy that plays the baby, he's an interesting dude. He's actually really active on social media. I want to tell you what his name is, but I don't have it off the top of my head. But every now and then he'll try to, like, it's kind of funny because it's pretty obvious what he's doing. Every now and then, like, you can tell he's trying to build off of the fact that he was a baby that cried in this famous movie, and he'll post a picture of himself as a baby with Lisa Bonet, like, backstage at the movie, like, offset, you know, just chilling, you know. And he's trying to get a lot of clout off of that. And he always tags Lisa Bonet in it, and she never responds. Like, I mean, she probably doesn't even see it. But you can tell he's trying to get some clout off of it and get a few extra followers, because he'll be like, me and Lisa. Shut up, dude. And he's like, I feel sorry for him, right? Because he probably wanted to be an actor his whole life after he was in a big movie. Like, I'm in a big movie with Robert De Niro and Mickey Rourke, and I was a baby. And when he was like 7 or 8 years old, his mom was like, yeah, let's make you an actor. And then it never worked out or whatever. Because I think that was the only movie he was ever in. When you peak as an actor as a baby, if that's your acting peak, you probably have a lot of messed up wiring in your head. You know, you've probably got some stuff going on in there that we're not ever going to solve. All right, we are virtually halfway through the program here. I want to come back in just a couple of seconds and talk about Christopher Lee. And I want to talk, we're going to hit on a Christopher Lee movie, which I promised, I told Dara to tell you guys on social media, and I think she did, that I want to talk about what I think is one of Christopher Lee's weirdest roles. And we're going to do that here in a couple of seconds.
Think about your mother, your sister, your girlfriend. One in six women is a victim of sexual assault. Now think about your father, your brother, your best friend. Men are victims too. Rape can happen to anyone. This is Christina Ricci with RAIN, encouraging you to call the National Sexual Assault Hotline to learn how to support someone you love. Call 1-800-656-HOPE or visit RAIN.org. That's RAINN.org.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Now, back to Vox Macabre and Kitman.
Oh, death and grief and sorrow and murder.
We're available on all major podcast platforms. Please make sure to subscribe or heart or whatever.
Oh, we are back. And this is Vox Macabre. I encourage you to drop us an email, voxmacabre@gmail.com. You can call the show as well. The phone number is listed on our social media. We've got it all over the place. I worked really hard. You guys have no idea. To try to get the phone number that had a 666 as the prefix. I had to beg. I had to go through like six different companies. And I finally got the phone number that had a 666 as a prefix. And I was kind of stupidly excited about it. Like, I went in and told my wife, I'm like, you're never gonna believe this. I got a phone number with 666. So it is 458-666-3248. And you can give us a call, ask a question, leave a comment, something positive. Negative comments will be ignored. It would just be flat ignored. Anthony Hopkins, the great actor Anthony Hopkins, he has my all-time favorite quote. Now, not a lot of people can do this. So let me just give you a little bit of background on me. I have been in the public eye in one way or another since I was like 13 years old. And I was a major market, big market radio guy, morning show host in a couple of big places. I was a program director at some fairly large radio stations. I don't say this to brag. I say it to tell you that my skin is as thick as concrete. There's literally nothing you can say that is going to make me think less of my ability or my skill set or myself. Now, if you attack my family, you and I are going to have problems. Or you go after people on the show that have nothing, that don't have the thick skin that I have, then we're going to have problems. But Anthony Hopkins, the great actor, has my all-time favorite quote when it comes to being in the public eye and having reviewers talk about you or the public in general talk about you. And a reporter or a Hollywood person asked Anthony Hopkins one time if he reads reviews or reads fan mail. And Anthony Hopkins said, no, I don't. And they said, really, not at all? He said, no, I don't. They said, why not? And he said, because what someone else thinks of me is none of my business. Oh, that stuck with me. That did stick with me. What someone else thinks of me is none of my business. I don't care. At all. At all. All right. Featured today on our Iconic Five is going to be Christopher Lee. We're going to talk about Christopher Lee because Christopher Lee is, well, he's an icon. That's just all there is to it. The if you go through and read just about Christopher Lee and forget about reading about his movies, just read about him. It's shocking. The sheer number of movies that he's done. Think about the fact that he's not only has he been in some of the most iconic horror movies of all time, but he's also in Star Wars. So he's in that franchise and in the Lord of the Rings franchise. And in, you know, like it's crazy the amount of stuff that he's done. Some stuff about Christopher Lee you may not know we will talk about here in a few minutes on the Iconic Five. But I want to talk for a minute about what I believe is Christopher Lee's weirdest role. And then we're going to talk about him in general. But I think his strangest role is a movie that is, it's a classic, I guess. I mean, it's not a classic. It's classic in that it's old and it's black and white. And I'm talking about a movie called The Castle of the Living Dead. Now, here's a movie that was made in, I think it's 1964. But here's a movie that has, Christopher Lee was already an established star by this point, right? One of the most iconic actors in horror cinema. And this movie, Castle of the Living Dead, is so strange. First of all, it's Italian production. It's not all Italians in the movie, but it's an Italian production. The name of his character in this is Count Drago. Nothing like Count Dracula. Now, he's not a vampire. What he is, is, I guess, what would you call him? A sinister taxidermist? Is that what it is? All right, Castle of the Living Dead. The story follows like this group of travelers who have to seek shelter in a remote castle, nothing like Dracula, only to sort of discover that the inhabitants of this castle are not what they seem. And as they start to, you know, unravel all the secrets and they find themselves kind of trapped in this nightmare-filled castle with, like, dark rituals and sinister experiments. And is there supernatural stuff going on? Is there not? You know, you're supposed to be on the edge of your seat, but are you? I don't know about that. It's directed by Warren Kiefer and Luciano Ricci. Castle of the Living Dead, it's obviously draws on elements of gothic horror and that typical universal, maybe even Hammer storytelling stuff. Mixed reviews on its release. It has developed a bit of a cult following, fans of like vintage horror cinema and all of that, but it's got some weird stuff going on. First of all, you can't figure out what Christopher Lee's character actually is. He's got this bizarre eye makeup, which doesn't really make any sense. It's like he's wearing just like dark circles around his eyes. And you're like, why did they do that? Did they do that to make him, was this supposed to make it look like evil or like what's with the bad makeup? And then there's this witch at the beginning and she's enormous. Like when the witch first pops out, you're watching the movie, and if you don't know anything about the movie, I'm going to give you a might be a spoiler. I don't know if you can spoil a movie that's, you know, 50 years old, 60 almost years old. But when the witch first pops out, she's got this oddly deep voice, and she's gigantic. And for some reason, she rhymes everything. I'm still not quite sure about that. But you realize later on who she is. There's a character at the beginning of the movie that is a soldier. And when he first comes on the screen, you go, holy cow, is that Donald Sutherland? Oh my God, that's Donald Sutherland. And then you go to look it up and you realize it's Donald Sutherland's first credited movie. All right, he had been in another movie, I think maybe two movies, where he had just played an uncredited character. And I think he had done some TV prior to this. But this is Donald Sutherland's first credited movie. And when you see him, it's obviously Donald Sutherland, even though he's really young. And you go, why is he acting so badly? Like, the lines that they've given him are so strange. But then you realize, you see this other character, and it's this old man. And you start looking and you go, oh my God, that's Donald Sutherland too. So not only is he the soldier at the beginning, but he's also this old man? Well, that's strange. And then you realize the reason that the witch has a deep voice and is enormous is because it's Donald Sutherland too. Donald Sutherland's like 6'5 or something, right? Like, how tall is Donald Sutherland? He's like 6'4. And he's playing this rickety old witch. So not only is it Donald Sutherland's, you know, first ever credited role, but he does three roles. This isn't a Christopher Lee movie. This is a Donald Sutherland introduce the world to the greatness that is Donald Sutherland, I guess. it's just really strange. But I told you we'd get back to Christopher Lee. So anyway, it's called Castle of the Living Dead. So go watch it. It's bizarre. It's just really weird. There's a death that happens in this movie. And you go, why did they have to kill that guy? It's just like, you didn't have to kill him. You could just make him disappear. He's not important enough to murder. It doesn't push the plot further at all. It's just like they all stop and go, you know what? You see that guy over there? Let's just go kill him. So strange. Christopher Lee. Let's get back to the Christopher Lee. Can we get back to the iconic five? Because I really want to talk about Christopher Lee. Because he is so genius in almost everything he does. He just plays everything so perfectly for the role that they've given him. Whether it was Dracula or... You know, one of my favorite things about Christopher Lee is that he played these roles where he didn't talk. He was the mummy once with Peter Cushing. And he was a Frankenstein monster with Peter Cushing. And in both times, he didn't say a word. In fact, there's a great quote from Christopher Lee, or from Peter Cushing, actually. Christopher Lee, apparently, in one of these movies, comes into Peter Cushing's trailer, and is just hot. And he's like, can you believe this? I just read the script. They didn't give me a single line. Can you believe this? And Peter Cushing goes, you're the lucky one. And he goes, how do you mean? He goes, I've read the script. Look at all the lines I have. Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing were in 22 movies together. Various genres, but most of them there were horror films. Most of those were Hammer film productions, but they were in 22 movies together. Christopher Lee was in the Royal Air Force, the British Royal Air Force, in World War II. He was probably not surprisingly an intelligence officer. And then he later transitioned to the Long Range Desert Group, which was Special Forces. He was also in Special Operations, where he conducted covert operations around Europe. Other cool things about Christopher Lee, he was fluent in English, French, German, Italian, and Spanish, which is why he was, if you go and look throughout his career, he did some Italian films. He did a couple of films that were not in the English language. He also holds the record, the Guinness Book of Records, for being in the most movies ever. 282 movies. Christopher Lee. 282 movies and film, or and television productions. 282. It's just insane. And if that wasn't enough, he insisted, even up until not too far from recently, he insisted on performing his own stunts whenever it was possible. He was known for being unbelievably physically fit and agile, and apparently there are legendary stories of him stunning the stunt coordinators on the movies with his ability to perform the stunts himself. Christopher Lee, just genuinely an all-time legend. So let me give you the iconic five, and eventually we'll have something fancy to go here that will introduce the iconic five. But let me give you the iconic five for me, Christopher Lee's best roles. Maybe not the best movies, but the best roles. Oh, while we're talking about weird roles, don't forget that one of his weirdest roles ever was in The Howling 2. Do you remember that Christopher Lee is in The Howling 2? You should remember that, right? That's a very weird role. That doesn't make the iconic five. Iconic five Christopher Lee roles. Number five. I'm going with The Devil Rides Out. 1968, showcasing his talent in this adaptation of Dennis Wheatley's occult novel. He plays the hero battling against evil, devilish forces. The Devil Rides Out is my number five iconic movie, iconic role of Christopher Lee. Number four, I'm going with The Horror of Dracula. This was not his first time being Dracula. This was his second time as Dracula in the Hammer Horror series. But this was 1958. This was the one movie, I think, that like made him an icon. This was the one where he really established his status as a horror icon. Number three, I'm going with the first one, or the second one. The second Dracula, right? The third, sorry. My brain is all messed up. Dracula, Prince of Darkness. Lee, he returns as the iconic vampire in this sequel to Horror of Dracula. Dracula, Prince of Darkness is where we're going on that one. The next one I'm going with, The Wicker Man. Cult classic. His performance as Lord Summerisle is just one for the books, man. Lord Summerisle was a mysterious, charismatic guy, and Christopher Lee absolutely nails it. That movie, I don't believe, becomes the cult classic that it became without Christopher Lee. The Wicker Man from 1973. And then my number one most iconic Christopher Lee role is the first one. The classic, Hammer horror classic, just plain titled Dracula from 1958. His iconic performance of Count Dracula, second only to Bela Lugosi. Bela Lugosi. If you were to ask the average person and show them a picture of Christopher Lee, the average horror fan is going to say, it's Dracula. Next to the Bela Lugosi, he's probably the most iconic Dracula figure. Right? I mean, then of course you got Gary Oldman later on, but Christopher Lee played Dracula, what? 1, 2, 3, 4... 5 times, 6 times. He was also in The Mummy in 1959, as I said, with Peter Cushing, and The Curse of Frankenstein, where he plays the Frankenstein monster, the creature, next to Peter Cushing's portrayal of Victor Frankenstein. So there you go. That is your iconic five for today. If you are not, I saw somebody the other day on Threads. I was reading through some of our responses and stuff, and people, there are a lot of people. We had a poll on which country has produced the best horror since the start of film. And I think a lot of people believe, and I don't necessarily disagree with the results of the poll. What I may disagree with are the results, are the width between the results, because the winning country was Japan, but not by very much over the United States. What I found interesting was how far behind Great Britain was in the poll. I thought that they would be, you know, really close, neck and neck, all three together, and that one of those three would win. And I do believe that there is a little bit of a recency bias against Great Britain in the horror genre. And that's because I think a lot of people kind of take these classic Hammer horror or that European, that British horror from the 40s, 50s, and 60s, but especially the 50s and 60s, and sort of dismiss it as maybe too camp in some cases, not scary, you know, just because it's a horror movie. It doesn't, you know, our tastes evolve. We become desensitized. If you took a movie today, if you took Angel Heart back to 1948, people would vomit in the aisles. People would kill themselves in the bathrooms. And forget even showing them something like Michael Myers or even something more progressive like Hereditary. You know, take The Witch and show that in the 1940s and 50s, and people are going to off themselves in the parking lot. because we've become so desensitized over time that we have sort of forgotten the greatness of Christopher Lee and Peter Cushing and those movies of the 1950s and 60s that really established horror as a mainstream genre. They were the reason that we can have slasher films today. They were the reason not, you know, that people can actually watch Japanese horror and not completely vacate their bowels. Because we got to ease into this stuff, people. You can't go from I've never seen a horror movie to Cannibal Holocaust, right? And the 50s and 60s, they helped us ease in. They helped us ease into 1973 to The Exorcist, okay? Without the ability to desensitize a little bit, The Exorcist would not have even been made, because that movie scared the living piss out of people, right? And we would have never gotten to that point had it not been for the greatness of horror movies in the 50s and 60s. So let's put some respect on their name. I just think it's super important. All right. All right. One more tiny little quick break, and then we're going to come back and wrap up the show with a hidden gem that I think some of you, speaking of Great Britain, by the way, some of you may have seen and some of you may not have seen. And if you haven't, I'm going to turn you on to it coming up here in just a second. So don't go away.
Think about your mother, your sister, your girlfriend. One in six women is a victim of sexual assault. Now think about your father, your brother, your best friend. Men are victims too. Rape can happen to anyone. This is Christina Ricci with RAIN, encouraging you to call the National Sexual Assault Hotline to learn how to support someone you love. Call 1-800-656-HOPE or visit RAIN.org. That's RAINN.org.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Now back to Vox Macabre with Kit Man.
We are back. All right, a hidden gem. We got two things to get to before the end of the show here. I want to tell you about our hidden gem, and then I'm going to give you one of our main features, and then we're going to let you go. The hidden gem I want to talk about today comes to us from Great Britain. It is got one of my favorite actors in it, and that's Martin Freeman. If I know you know who Martin Freeman is, but if you don't know who Martin Freeman is, he was Dr. Watson in the Sherlock series with Cumberbatch Benedict Cumberbatch. I want to give you a few insights into this what I'm talking about. It's just a show called Ghost Stories. Now, even though Martin Freeman is the big name in the thing, he's not the main character. Now this is that'd be the Ghost Stories that was taken from a stage play of the same name. Now the Ghost Stories, the play, was written by Jeremy Dyson and Andy Nyman. It's known for its intense kind of atmospheric, clever narrative twist. The play originally premiered at the Liverpool Playhouse in 2010, and then eventually ended up on London's West End. And then subsequently toured all over the world. And then it was made into a movie with Martin Freeman. Now, he's not directly associated with the stage play, but he did star in the film adaptation, which was released in 2017. And the movie, he plays Professor Philip Goodman, who's a central character to the plot. The stage play and the film adaptation of Ghost Stories have been received very positively, but I want to give you just a few little interesting takes on it. No, he wasn't the professor. That's my bad. Sorry. I'm reading. Somebody wrote down the wrong thing. Who wrote that down? Martin Freeman's one of my favorite actors ever, but... Now, this show, I think you can get it on Amazon Prime right now. It's about this guy who's is the professor, and he's kind of a debunker, right? Like a paranormal debunker. And this movie follows him investigating three stories that his, like, idol debunker was unable to debunk. And his idol says, if you can debunk these three stories, then you're better than me, because I can't debunk them. And so he goes off to do the investigation on these three stories. Now, it starts out pretty normal, but if you start looking, you'll start seeing the number 79 everywhere. And I noticed it before I actually did any research into the movie. You start seeing the number 79 anywhere, like on a wall or in a phone number. And then you also start seeing, like, other numbers repeat. 19, 92, 6, 20. You start seeing all these numbers just kind of pop up. Now, one of the things I liked about this movie called Ghost Stories is it never really shows the monsters. And I always like that better. Do you know how many movies are ruined because in the third act, they show the monster and it's like a rubber puppet and you're like, what in the world? This one doesn't do that. So the movie goes along and you think to yourself, yeah, I mean, this thing's okay. It's all right. It's nothing great, but it's okay. It's holding my interest. And then, bam, this thing just goes off the rails. The twist in this is some wild stuff with Martin Freeman's character. When Martin Freeman does a thing, you just go, what the hell? And then the movie just gets more twisty from that point. It is called Ghost Stories. And yes, I screwed up on Martin Freeman's character. I apologize for that. But it is called Ghost Stories. And I think you would really, really like it. Andy Nyman is the main character. Martin Freeman, Alex Lawther is in it. Paul Whitehouse, who I love, is in it. You can tell kind of that it was taken from a stage play because it sort of flows like a stage play. But it is, I just thought it's underrated and a little hidden horror gem with some of the best twists. That there is a movie that it reminds me of, and I'm not going to tell you what it is because it will give away the plot. But you'll know it if you know both movies. I just tell you, it's a John Cusack movie. Hope I didn't give away too much. And if I did, I owe you an apology.
Gather round, children. It's time for Campfire Tales with Uncle Kit.
So this is called Campfire Tales, and this is where I'm going to tell you, at the end of every show, a true story that I myself, or someone near to me, has experienced. And you are welcome to send me a detailed, an account of a horror that you may have experienced. And if we feature it here on Campfire Tales, you're going to win a Vox Macabre t-shirt. Every single person who we feature on Campfire Tales will win a Vox Macabre t-shirt. So if you have a story that actually happened to you, don't be telling me no bullshit. Like, if you got something that actually happened, oh, and I'll know. I'll know if you're making it up. Send it to voxmacabre@gmail.com. And I'm going to tell you mine. One of many. Because I've had many experiences that other people would go, what? And in fact, when I met my wife, I told her some of them, and I think she was probably like, yeah, whatever. But then she's seen some stuff, too, around me in the last, years and stuff. And I think, well, I know that she can honestly vouch for every one of them. Now, she can't vouch for this one because I was 17 years old. And I grew up in the Bible Belt. And when you're 17 in the Bible Belt, back in the 1980s, you end up going on church field trips.
Now, field trips in the 80s were a lot different than they are now. Everything was different in the 80s. But in the 80s, you would go on a field trip and there was zero supervision. I mean, literally, they would pull up into the parking lot, open the door of the bus, and say, go learn something. Here's some tokens for your lunch. Be back here in 4 hours. Here's your stuff. Go eat lunch. Be back here in 4 hours. We're going to be smoking weed and having sex in the back of the bus. Like you were left completely to your own devices. So, and even at church camp, and trust me, church field trips and church camp were some of the most debauched events of my childhood. I saw stuff that, I mean, you know what I'm talking about. So we went to a Civil War battleground. It was about 3 hours from our hometown. We all piled into this bus and we went to a Civil War battleground. And the battleground was called Pea Ridge. P-E-A, not P-E-E. Pea Ridge, the Battle of Pea Ridge. It's a Civil War battleground. And it was actually a quite important battle. It's in Arkansas near the Missouri border. The Pea Ridge National Military Park is there. And people have been reporting phantom sounds, ghostly apparitions, la, 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 la. But I didn't know any of that at the time. I thought I was going to learn about the Civil War. Now, Pea Ridge was also known as the Battle of Elkhorn Tavern. From March 6th of 1862 to March 8th of 1862 in Pea Ridge, Arkansas, the Union defeated the Confederates, and it was a very important battle to help the Confederacy stay out of Missouri. If they would have taken Missouri, things might have gone a little differently for them, but it did not happen, and it halted the Confederate advance. Now, you probably don't care about that because I'm trying to tell you this story about ghosts and whatnot. Now, when I went, I don't know if it's changed because you're talking about, you know, close to 400 years ago when I was 17. They had all kinds of buildings there that you could go into. And I believe that Elkhorn Tavern, the remains of that tavern were also there as well. I don't know if they still are. Now, remember, these are church kids. And some of us were actually kind of serious about learning about the stuff that was going on there. Some of us were out there acting the fool. But I was not. I was a good boy. And I'm walking around with a couple of friends. Ted was one of them. I can't remember the other guy. Rick. Ted and Rick. Rick and Ted? Yeah, that's right. And there were three of us. And when I say we saw, I mean all three of us saw. So we're out there walking around this battlefield, looking at the cannons and looking at the places where they bivouacked and listening to the audio stories about the war and all of that stuff. And we see these three guys walking towards us in their little reenactment uniforms. You know, their little cosplay. I'm a soldier. Really, they worked at 7-Eleven on the weekends. But out here, they're playing Army guy. And we see three of them, and they kind of walk towards us. And we were pointing at them and thinking it was actually kind of cool for whatever reason, because we were 17 probably. And one of them like looked over and he like tipped his hat and they kept walking. No big deal, but it was kind of cool. So we go into this other building and we see, you know, some more reenactment stuff. And I start hearing like a whispery noise. And I'm thinking that was weird. Didn't think anything of it. Because at this point, nobody had told us that the battlefield was frickin' haunted. Now, you and I, at our advanced intelligence level now in the world of horror, would go to a battlefield and, of course, think it's haunted. But when you're 17, in the Bible Belt, at a church function, that's not the first thing on your mind. So we go into this other building, and they're talking to us about the war and the dead guys and all the stuff that had happened. And that guy that had tipped his hat to me walked by the window. The cosplay guy. And so I thought, I want to talk to one of the people that work here that's not on the tour group, and I want to ask some questions about the battlefield. So I go out, and the guy is standing over by a tree. And I walk over to him, and as I get closer to him, I'm not kidding you, 100% swear, he faded away. The dude faded away. Have you ever done like a Photoshop or a graphic editing and you use the transparency slider and it eventually it gets lighter and lighter and lighter and lighter until it's gone? That's what happened with this dude. The tip the hat guy, he was standing by a tree holding his Civil War gun, just standing there staring off into the distance with his back to me. And every step I took closer was like sliding that slider. He just faded a little more, a little more, a little more, a little more. And then he was gone. And I went, what the? And I ran inside to get my friend Ted and the other friend who I think name was Rick. And I said, I tried to tell Ted what was going on. He was like, no, that didn't happen. I go, yeah, dude, I did see it. He's like, nah, you didn't. Then the tour lady that was doing the talk earlier inside this building, she came over and she said, I'm sorry, what did you just say you saw? And I told her, and you know what she said? She said, oh yeah, that must have been Captain John. People see Captain John by that tree all the time. Whatever. That is my campfire tale for today. And that is going to wrap up this episode, the premiere episode of Vox Macabre. If you have a campfire tale, please write it out in detail and send it to me, voxmacabre@gmail.com. You can keep track of us on Threads, where you will most likely be interacting with Dara. And I want to thank Dara for all of the social media work and all of the research and production, even though somebody, I'm not going to say who, wrote Martin Freeman's name in the cast list wrong. Made me look stupid. Thank you so much. We appreciate it. We will come back. Episode 2 will be just a few days from now as we are just getting this started. At some point, you may listen to this and we may already be on episode 80 and you're just getting started with us, in which case you can go right now and download another episode. But for the most part, since you're just joining us and we're just getting rolling, the next episode we'll post on, let's see, that's going to be on Thursday, April the 25th. So right now, as you're listening, this is Monday, likely. After Monday the 22nd, the next episode will post on Thursday, April the 25th. Thanks again for joining us on the premiere episode of Vox Macabre, and we hope that you have enjoyed it and you will come back and join us again next week, because we got a lot of good fun stuff coming up, some more features, some more Iconic Five stuff. I haven't decided. I was originally going to go from Christopher Lee to Peter Cushing, but I don't think we're going to do that. I have another idea that I want to explore on the next episode of Vox Macabre.
Thanks for listening to Vox Macabre with Kit Mann. Follow us on Threads and Instagram at Vox Macabre and our website, voxmacabre.com. We're available on all major podcast platforms. Please make sure to subscribe or heart or whatever.